Chris is back, and I have an extra large sausage for you.
Welcome to Gay Talk 2.0, the ultimate podcast for your dose of dish. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to another episode of Gay Talk 2.0, an LGBT podcast streaming live on Digital Stream Radio, where you can listen live every Monday at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and you can do so by visiting digitalstreamradio.com. Tonight, we are joined by Brandon James, an author. His book, Lyrics of My Life, is what we'll be covering today. It's basically a book about his life, his family, living with HIV, and also being a reality TV star. He will join us after the break. My name is Tom, and I am your host. And as always, I'm here with all of my... Tonight is all of the co-hosts, starting with the first one.
Hey, y'all, Nick or Trish.
And...
You can... Is that me? Chris?
Yeah.
Good to be back with you guys. It's Chris.
And of course,
hi, it's Elsie.
And welcome, thank you all, and welcome to the show. We can't scream the dish because we can't seem to get it in sync with this whole new video getup that we're doing. But we're all happy to be here. So, being that he is on with us, I wanted to get Chris quickly to. Well, he's got to go run away. So anyway, welcome back, everyone. Another week, another show, another virtual show. So why don't we start off with Trish? Trish, how are you?
I'm fine, I guess.
How's quarantine life treating you?
I'm getting a little stir crazy, but generally I'm okay. I'm working on a lot of stuff still at work, so at least I have that. But it's been different for sure.
Interestingly enough, you are correct. And Miss Elsie, how are you, my dear?
I'm great. It's my standard answer to that. I'm great.
You're great. How's quarantine life treating you?
I decided that I'm not going to complain. I have my Roomba that keeps me company now.
How's your floors?
I totally walk around with no socks on.
Oh, wow.
She doesn't have to pick up all the, you know, dusties.
I love it. And I may or may not have followed it around from room to room a couple of times out of boredom to observe its behavior.
To observe its behavior.
Interesting.
I want to see what it does when I won't be home eventually. If I can trust it.
So have you learned anything about your Roomba?
I learned that my Roomba is too dumb to realize that my Roomba, not I, right, is too dumb to understand that it has to go around the damn wall to come back home, and it keeps bumping into the wall.
I thought those things have a built-in sensor. Lord have mercy. And of course, Chris, how have you been, darling?
I miss the crap out of you guys, and I miss Gay Talk.
Well, I'm getting a little shaggy.
Yeah,
I know. Yeah, you know, what are you gonna do? I did have to shave my head.
Well, that's important.
And get some fresh hair in there.
And how is the quarantine life treating you?
Boring as all hell, and stressful because my dumb bitch of a landlady terminated the lease, so I no longer live in Connecticut. Actually, I live in Massachusetts. Yes, I live in East Hampton, Mass. Now, and I'm, as you can see, I'm in a storage room of a restaurant. I'm actually delivering food for a Greek restaurant. I'm just trying to, you know, get
what
something.
Is with you in Greek restaurants? Like, what?
I don't know. I pulled the Greek card. I called them. I was like, "Yo, I work for some Greeks in Connecticut," and they're like, "Yasu, come on, Malacca." So here I am.
That's insane.
What is that restaurant called?
It's called Philos Greek Taverna in Northampton, Massachusetts. I do have some delicious Greek food that I have to go deliver right now, but I did want to make sure I saw you guys, say hi, let everyone know I'm still part of the show. I still love the show, and I miss all of our listeners, and I hope you guys have a great show. I will see you soon, and once we get things squared away, I'll be more regular.
I would hope so, because we miss your face. We miss having you. And hopefully, you know, if you're not doing anything, you'll take the ride down and join us in studio when all of this is over.
Absolutely. So my mask is on and I'm going to go hit the road. All right. I love you guys.
All right. We love you.
I'll see you all soon and take care of all of our listeners. I love you guys too.
Mama Kim Bye-bye. Sends a lot of love.
Send her my love, please.
Will do.
Have a good night, guys.
You too.
Bye.
Well, of course, that was Chris. It's been a while since he's been on the show, and he wanted to come on and just say hello again. And it's been a little tough, you know, things for everyone moving around and trying to figure things out during this COVID-19 thing. But, you know, we'll get through it. So we have, maybe I can confirm with my other two co-hosts, it is going to be a little uplifting show for you guys today. I don't have any outlandish or crazy stories, but nonetheless, we do. So why don't we just jump right in? Can we do that?
Yeah.
Okay. So the COVID-19 pandemic, of course, has pushed the limits of what humanity is capable in ways that we have not seen, at least not in this generation, right? The last time we had a major pandemic, it was in the 1920s. And so we really didn't know what to expect or what would happen in a situation like this. But one thing that I've seen and one thing that I've observed is that we have managed to embrace technology amidst the crisis in a way that truly is inspirational. And that being said, you know, I have to talk about the San Francisco Gay Men's Chorus. This particular chorus, it's 150 members, 150 members of the chorus got together and did a virtual session and created this amazing performance, which they dubbed Truly Brave. It is a mashup between Cyndi Lauper's True Colors and Sarah Bareilles' Brave. And so they called it Truly Brave. It is their first virtual chorus performance, and it was dedicated to the truly brave responders, first responders, healthcare workers, and frontline people that are battling COVID-19. The chorus posted their video, which of course we are also going to post on our tonight's post. And the video is titled "You Are Our Heroes." But being that I am who I am, I wanted to share just a small little 30-second clip with you guys, and then we'll discuss. So here we go.
Say what you wanna say.
I have to tell you, so I watched the entire video. It's about 3 minutes and 20 seconds, I believe. It is incredible to see 150 plus people come together and do a virtual thing that creates music, and finding a way to do this is just incredible. So I wanted to throw that out there. Elsie, why don't we start with you? What did you think about that?
I'm a logistics person, and my first thought is, how in the world? Who was the patient's soul that orchestrated this?
Literally, it was my thoughts exactly. I mean, first of all, I don't even know what program would allow you to have 150 people on. I don't even think Zoom can do that. It's just incredible. Yeah. It's just incredible to see. I mean, I'm probably thinking that they took a whole bunch of different videos and pieced them together.
That's kind of what I thought, and then mixed it.
There has to be some sort of production behind it, but it was all done remotely. These are all individuals singing from their homes, and they put everything together, and they created this amazing masterpiece, which just goes to show you how talented and how amazing people are when they're faced with something like COVID-19. Anyone? Trish is over there fixing her computer. So
I'm sorry, yeah. I'm having issues today. I don't know what's going on.
So Elsie, I'll ask you, have you ever been to a chorus performance?
Yes.
And what are your thoughts? I mean, which one did you go see?
So live music to me is amazing to begin with, but when you're able to have such a significant amount of people actually be able to harmonize and have it just sound so beautifully, I love that experience. I love it.
So we have had the opportunity and the pleasure of being in company of the Hartford Gay Men's Chorus, which is our local chorus here, and the Connecticut Gay Men's Chorus as well. And I have to tell you that you're right, Elsie. When you think about what people do, how they come together and harmonize, and obviously, you know, there's a lot of training, there's a lot of practicing and rehearsing. And so, you know, it just makes it for an amazing experience. When you're sitting in the audience, you can see how hard these people have worked to create this magic. It's
absolutely amazing.
So, Trish, you've been to some of the chorus performances we've had and have featured some promos for our local choruses here in Connecticut. What are your thoughts?
I mean, I think it's like super powerful. I mean, it's interesting right now. I mean, but I mean, even this past week, I had a Zoom call with my entire work staff, and even though we weren't singing, but we were together, there was something really powerful about it and comforting about it. And I'm glad this went viral, and I'm glad that people are doing that for our healthcare workers. But I think what's really amazing is how we've started to come to this place of, wait, we really do need to value human connection. And if it's virtual, it's virtual. If it's not, great. But the reality is it's so hard. But being able to even see you and Elsie on the screen, it's this new world, and it's really important to continue to connect and talk and sing or whatever it is. But that's what I take away from it. Yeah, it was powerful and important for our healthcare workers, and obviously we're all like hands up to all of our healthcare workers, because holy shit. But it's important to stay connected and make sure. I mean, I haven't talked to my parents or my grandparents this much in forever, and we're on the phone every day because out of concern, out of boredom, whatever it is, we're connecting with people again, and it's really great.
That's out of the need to feel connected.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I mean, so here's the other thing that I was you know, contemplating the other day. First of all, regarding the San Francisco Gay Men's Chorus, how the fuck do you fit 150 people on a stage? Our choruses are like, I think it's like 35, 40 members and 50 in the other one. And it's like their stages are full. How do you fit 150 people on a stage? Ooh, okay. Well, Raleigh joined the show.
All right, she need to calm down. Hold on one second, okay. Everybody.
Go ahead and do you. I'll stay here with Elsie. Elsie, one of the things that I've learned throughout all of this, or at least I'm starting to perceive and come to understand, is the little things that we're learning that we can live without, right? Because we're so used to always being in a fast-paced world. We're constantly going and going, going and going. And then now that we're forced to be enclosed in a house with four walls, maybe a TV, some radio, or some other distraction, and you're by yourself, you're starting to pick up on things that, you know what, I thought I needed that, but I can do without that now.
I'm a huge, it's kind of an oxymoron, but I'm a huge minimalist. And so those are some of the conversations I've had with like my friends and my family, people who know me well. They're like, I get it. I fucking get it. You must be okay. And I'm like, yeah, because I don't need all that shit. Stop going out window browsing, because you're going to come home with stuff that you don't need. Mm. Like, just
Well, Nick wanted to buy shades, but you know, but that's one of the things that I feel.
You need shades?
Yeah.
Then that's different.
You know, because he was like, I'm tired of looking at the ones that are there. I need new shades. And I'm like,
oh, I don't know if you understand what need me.
What? Sorry, everybody. So, Raleigh, my puppy, not puppy anymore, but she's being super needy ever since I've been home. I mean, like, I'm home all the time now, and if I take my slippers off, she's like, oh, we're going out for a walk. I'm like, no, I just needed to take my slippers off. But she never barks, ever. And now, all of a sudden, if I'm not paying attention to her, she barks. So now she's sitting by my feet and I'm petting her. So I'm sorry that she was barking earlier.
And, you know,
I need the satisfaction with that one.
I mean,
at least
Elsie has a Roomba and you have Raleigh. You know, I've started to notice several different, like, unique behaviors in my two boys as well, in the sense that they're much more like on top of me now. Like, usually before, when I got home, the first 5 or 10 minutes, it was bouncing and bouncing and, hey, you're home. And then they would go do their own things and play with their balls or each other, and then it was done. And now it's like, oh, my God. It's like, if I'm working, one is here, the other one's here. They're both on my feet, and it's something that I've never experienced with them before.
Mm-hmm.
And so you start noticing all the little things, and it's cute. I find it cute, you know, because it's a different side of them that I've never seen. But, you know,
really? Oh my God, Trish!
What?
That's the third time I call you Chris.
Yeah, it's fine. I've never been an animal person, and so this dog, technically, me and my roommate got the dog together. But my roommate's a vet tech, wanted a dog, so we got a dog, and now it's like, what the hell? I'm taking care of it every day, all day. What? Won't leave me alone.
Never about me.
But I will tell you, I will confess. Trish seems to spoil her a bit because he takes her places, calls her poop, come here. He's very lovey dovey with
Pooper.
He's very lovey dovey with that dog. So don't let him fool you.
I love the dog. Don't get me wrong. I do love the dog. But when we got the dog, it was not my dog. and now it's like
she thinks she is.
Yours. If we get a divorce,
you belong to her.
No.
They'll be a custody.
But I mean, her face, I can't handle
it. She's adorable. So she's a Basenji mixed with a pit bull?
A pit Basenji mix. Yeah,
and she is gorgeous, and she is the most gentle beast you will ever see. My dogs see other dogs and goes bananas, and Nick brings Raleigh over, and my dogs completely ignore her. Not out of fear, I don't think. They just know, like, okay, you don't mess with her, but she's sweet as an angel. She's just adorable. So
I'm going to tell you this, and I know it sounds terrible, and I'm aware of that. Please don't let this be a representation of my character. Mm. I have never actually touched a dog.
What?
What?
Or a cat.
Until you met mine.
I've never touched it.
They jumped on you.
But I have not put my hands on them.
I think,
why?
So I hope that my mental health will make me sound less terrible. But I have an issue with textures and the fur and the fact that there's no thickness and they're always warm to the touch. And something that I'm afraid of dogs, I'm not. You know, like I don't think that if I were to reach out to them and pet them on their heads, they're going to bite me. That never, like, crosses my mind ever.
Suddenly, I understand exactly why you waited until so late to start having relationships. It's the touching of textures and how the penises are always warm to the touch, especially when they're hard.
Oh,
I understand.
My God.
It all makes sense now, Miss Elsie.
Oh, my God, sorry. You're the worst. But yes.
So I know that we're going to have a guest.
God, you saved me like years of therapy right now. Should write you a check?
Like, seriously.
Make sure you journal that later.
Yeah, because you know they call them perro caliente, right? The dogs. And so, you know.
So I'm also severely allergic. My sister, I don't know the make and models of dogs. I think it's a Maltese. I think that's the model.
That's the model. Okay. That's the breed.
Sure. That's the brand.
That's hypoallergenic. So she had a tumor and they had to remove her breasts, the poor thing. And she's like 15 years old. And so they have a cone so she'll stop, you know, licking her wounds. And so I'll let her put her paws on my knees, right? But I won't pet her. And now it makes me feel like I want to get like a little mitten so I can touch her because she's like breaking my heart. She looks like she's in so much pain and she won't move from my feet. And so like I'll touch the cone around her. Stop it, Tommy.
I feel Tommy right now.
I know how bad this sounds. So like I'll tap her gently and I guess it feels comforting to her because if I stop, she'll like come over and go like this to my head.
I cannot.
And I call her perra because I'm an asshole, though her name is Poochie.
I can't.
If I'm in the living room or wherever I am in the house and I say perra, she knows I'm fucking talking to her and she'll come over.
I cannot. But
she makes me feel like an asshole, and I have never ever wanted to touch a dog until now. Like, I just want to comfort her because she's in so much pain, the poor thing. And I,
you can come and play with my two boys. I'm gonna sit you in a room, and I'm gonna lock you in there with my two boys, and they're just gonna have a gay old time with you. You'll be Auntie Elsie.
No. So. And they move their cages or the little collar things so they won't bite me. I know they won't bite me. Because again, it's not like I'm afraid of dogs.
Oh, Fitz tried to go after me once and that ended real quick.
So
I would have a problem with that.
That being said, now you're talking about my babies. I'm going to start getting defensive and I'm going to cut somebody. So,
you know, we're not wrong.
We're going to take a break because we do have a guest that's coming on at 6:30. And so I'm going to leave all of you with some music. And then Elsie, myself, and Trish will be back. Or excuse me, Nick. And so here's some music and we'll be right back.
Greeted by a new sunrise. Tomorrow's hopes are in my eyes. Paints horizons in the sky that's meant for me, meant for me. Ready now to face the day. Done with fears of yesterday. Waited long enough to say I'm on the way. I'm on the way. I believe. Believe.
Well, welcome back from the break, ladies and gentlemen. That was Believe, of course, going by Going Deeper and featuring Davis Mallory. He is one of our previous guests on the show, an amazing musician out of Tennessee, out of, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, he is from, it's not Knoxville. I think it's Nashville. It's definitely Nashville. But anyway, we're waiting on one more co-host to come back and joining us. And join us before we bring our guest, of course, that we have lined up. Elsie's on. Hi, Elsie. Hello, darling.
You had me muted.
I did. So welcome back. How was your break?
My break was fine. I'm in the midst of potentially buying property.
Oh, nice. Well, that's good.
And so I had to answer a bunch of questions for my realtor, who doesn't understand that he's not the only one that has other things going on in life.
It's not a very fun process, I will say that. So anyway,
I've been through it before, so, you know.
Oh, I'm sure. So now that we're all here, let's go ahead and bring our guest. Joining us now, of course, is Brandon James. He is the author of Lyrics of My Life. We want to welcome him to the show. There's the book. Welcome, Brandon.
Hello there. How are you doing today?
We're doing good. How are you? Wonderful.
Hi, Brandon.
Hi, Elsie. Hi, Nick. Hi, Tom. Can you see me all right? Am I bright enough?
Yep. I think.
Well, I don't know. What's your IQ?
We're going to get to that real soon.
So you're joining us today. You've written a book, but there's so much more to you than just an author. I was on your webpage and looking around, and you're also a singer.
Yes, I am. And I have to say, first of all, if it's Nick or Trish, I'm not sure who has the copy of the book, but I'm jealous of you because I actually don't have a physical copy of the book. Where'd you get that?
I think your publisher.
How come I don't have one?
I don't know. I do have to say, though, it came somehow, for some reason, it came all like cut up a little bit.
Oh, I wonder.
I think it was probably the post office. You know, they were pulling it off the skid and they just slit it with a razor, and there goes the book.
Reading the last chapter, I was like, okay, hold on. What page?
Micro pages at a time.
So as we were saying before, well, we got the copy of the book from your publisher. They were kind enough to send us a copy so that we could preview the book when we had you on the show. And the book is releasing in May. So that's coming. That's right around the corner.
Well, it's actually, I'm sorry to deliver this news to you at this moment. Amazon Manufacturing had to sort of change their priorities because of what's happening and things that they need. So the book is actually now coming out in September.
Okay. So let's,
It is still available for pre-order, and it will be, apparently some people have copies already, and anyone can get a copy from September 12th, 2020 forward.
Except for the author.
Except for me.
Except for the author, right.
Fantastic. So before we move into the book, I'm really curious, and also I want to sort of kind of get out some confusion out of my head. I want to dive into a little bit into your music and what you're doing musically, and also your partner.
Absolutely.
So your name is Brandon James.
It is.
And then the website is Brandon and James. Is your partner's name James?
His name is James.
Okay, good. I feel better now. I was so...
We were all confused.
I was like, oh my God, what are we doing here?
It was keeping him up at night.
It really was. I was like, are we interviewing two people or is it just one person? Or should I send an email and ask? But I'm glad that you clarified that.
So yeah, his name is James. We're married. So when we got married 2 years ago, people asked him, is he going to change his name? So he'd be James, but we decided to keep our own names. It's confusing enough. It was very strange because I was a solo singer long before I met him and formed a duo with my husband, and I never expected that I could just put an ampersand in my name and suddenly have a new brand with two people, but that's what happened. Yeah.
So
very cool.
You are very gifted.
We got the short end of that stick because everybody's like, yeah, it's Brandon James and that other guy. No, it's Brandon James.
Yes.
So I was watching your audition earlier today, and I honestly, I was crying, but I mean, I cry at everything, so that doesn't really matter. But I was wondering, and I know in the book it says that everybody asks you about your experience, but like, what was that like for you?
Well, obviously it was such an amazing experience to have. There are very few people, maybe the president, not even Paris Hilton could buy primetime television if she wanted to. So to have that kind of exposure was an amazing experience. What I was experiencing in my own head wasn't always as amazing. I always describe it to people as kind of like being on a game show and in a personal nightmare at the same time.
Fun?
Yeah. Because there's so much pressure and there are 14 million people watching at home and it's live and there's no room for error and you're wrapped up in this competition. Are you good enough? And there's all these weird things that happen to your psyche that I don't normally deal with, really. That came flooding in during that tense time. So it was a crazy experience, but a fruitful one. I'm so glad I did it, and I would do it again if I had the opportunity.
So in the clip that I was watching, you talk a little bit, and you talk about it in your book as well, about your upbringing being gay and your family not.
You grew up as a gay man?
Yeah, right. But your family not accepting the fact that you were gay, but your mom was there to support you. But that was also kind of in my thought process, your storyline. And I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about how it felt sharing that story, knowing that your mom was there supporting you.
It was difficult for sure. We were healing in real life time. My parents and I and my siblings, they kind of needed to see me through a different lens, which happened to be the TV show. So while things were happening in real time, our relationships were healing. I started talking to them again more frequently. We became close again. We made amends. We apologized for all the things that happened in the past. But it's almost as if they needed to see me through another lens to see who I really was at heart and take away all of their preconceived notions about who I am because I'm a gay person. So that happened, which was a beautiful thing. Coming out with a story like that on national television does a lot of things. That there are a lot of comments if you look on YouTube videos and stuff while I was performing on the show. Some of them are very unfavorable to me and to my mom, and I felt bad about that because it was never my intention. But the beautiful thing about all of this is that I had thousands of people reach out to me, kids in places like Egypt who would be killed if anyone found out that they were gay. In Russia, kids who've been thrown out of pastors' homes in Georgia and Alabama, parents with kids who they suspected were gay or trans who'd ask me for help. And I realized quickly after just telling a little bit of my story that people looked to me for guidance, and it was a lot of responsibility to be in that place. But it feels really good to know that just by sharing your story, you have the opportunity to help so many people that I never suspected.
Yeah, no, I mean, I feel like, and Tom, Elsie, correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like through this show, we've had similar, not as broad, but similar experiences. And it's like having these people reach out to you, you're like, your heart breaks for them and you just want to hold them and make sure that they're going to be okay.
Yeah. Yeah. It's tough. And I still have some of the initial people who reached out to me have become really good friends of mine, and I keep in close contact with them, and we're friends on Facebook and we chat all the time. And I'm so grateful for that part of the experience. And it's given me an even softer heart than I already had. I love helping people. It's what excites me. And now that I know that I can do it, I want to do more of it.
You know, it's weird because for me, at least, one of the hardest things for me when I was growing up was the fear of coming out, the fear of acknowledging to the world that I was a homosexual, that I was a gay man, and that this was where I was going and how I was going to live my life. But then once you do it, you realize, you know, what was I waiting for? What was I scared of? Right. It's like you build up so much anxiety and anticipation of making this huge declaration, which, by the way, Nick and I agree on this 100%. It shouldn't even be a thing anymore coming out, but it is.
How is it a thing?
And so one of the things that I realized is like, I worked myself up, the anxiety built, and I drove myself bananas. And it was probably so easy afterwards on the other side. And one of the things that breaks my heart is watching somebody struggle through that and wanting to tell them, literally, just don't drive yourself crazy. Just do it. Because, you know, you have to let people process that. You have to let people go through that and eventually get to that point. But then once they do, they realize it was, you know, why did I wait so long, or why was I so scared? And I think that's one of my challenges, is when I see someone in that situation, I want to immediately jump and grab them and shake them and be like, snap out of it. Just do it. And then I also have to remind myself that it took me a while and I had to find my place and time to do it.
But you also talk a little bit about that in your book, about the shame that you feel as a gay individual, and how that kind of holds you back. I don't know if you want to speak to that a little bit before we dive 100% into this book.
Yeah, sure. There's still certain circumstances where, in social settings, where I'm apprehensive, and my husband and I even are apprehensive. After a show, people will come up to us and say, well, how'd you get together? And some of our shows, we don't talk about our relationship because it's just not the... We might be playing at a performing arts center in the South, the Midwest, and it's not the right kind of environment to really go into our relationship. It's not what our show is about in some venues. So when that happens, we both can be apprehensive about people who ask a bunch of questions, because they'll say, well, do you have a wife at home? Do you have a girlfriend? Do you have any kids? I bet they miss you. You're on the road a lot. And at some point, we both just kind of got tired of lying, essentially, which what it is, mm-hmm. and feeling ashamed and holding that shame inside of ourselves, where we just started telling the truth. And in some circumstances, people will walk away. We've had people buy our albums after a show, and then someone else came up and said, okay, so how long have you been married? It's really obvious the way you guys look at each other on stage. And and the couple so the couple that bought them returned them. They said, sorry, we're not going to support you.
Ooh.
And I just wanted to say, well, do you like Elton John? Because he's gay and he's got pretty good music, and I bet you've listened to some of his recordings. But I didn't go there. It's strange. I can only equate it to maybe persons of color have a similar kind of thought processes when they might be apprehensive. You never know who you're approaching and what they might think of you. And that's even 100 times more amplified than holding a secret inside about my sexuality.
Right.
If someone can't hide the color of their skin and they're talking to someone who may not like it, I feel like that's a fear that people live with more often than we talk about.
How do you work through like, for somebody who has a platform, or somebody who was about to have a platform, how did you make that step or decision to move through that shame and embrace the shame so that it wasn't shameful, but it was something powerful that you could actually share with the world?
Well, each step that I took to share more of my story empowered me more. And certainly writing a book and sharing very intimate details in the book and just being as open and transparent about it was very cathartic for me. I sat on my bed for about a year and a half writing that. And a lot of crazy emotions came up. I wanted to be as vivid as possible, and I was reliving a lot of painful things that happened to me. And I was angry at my mom again. I was very upset and went into kind of a depression for a while. It also happened to coincide with my 40th birthday, so maybe that has something to do with it. But it's
don't be ashamed of your age.
I'm not at all.
I mean, we got our faces and we're 40.
I mean, Elsie, we look good.
So, speaking of family and writing a book, and when you're sitting there and you're writing these things down, what's going through your mind when you're saying, oh my God, I'm going to bring this person into, I'm going to put this on paper. This is going to be something that people have access to. And this issue with my mother, or this issue with my father, or this issue with this specific person. Was there ever a time in where you thought, I'm going to put this into a book, maybe I shouldn't?
Well, I never intended to write a book at all. I was working with a social media manager, and he advised my husband and I to write some blogs on our website because it would improve our search engine optimization, which I'm sure you know all about, broadcasting in the way that you guys do. So I started writing blogs, and a couple of literary agents approached me, and I just thought, well, okay, this is my next calling, I guess. I never dreamt of being a writer. I still don't really fancy myself as one, and I never had any aspirations to write a book or publish anything. So it's just something that came and fell into my lap, so I figured that I should follow through with it because it's a sign to the universe or whatever you'd like.
Well, yeah, I mean, and to be honest, I mean, for somebody who never thought they were a writer, you're great. I mean, the book, so far, I'm not completely done with it. I'll be 100% transparent, but so you are a great writer. And my question, though, is why an autobiography? Like, how did you come to Lyrics of My Life?
Well, the literary agents that approached me said your story was very interesting. And they wanted to write it in a memoir style. And I said, well, I'm not 80 years old. And they said, well, a lot of young people are writing memoirs these days because people live a lot of their life in a short amount of time. So we decided to write it chronologically, and it turns out that there was plenty of stories to fill the book. There were a lot more that we ended up cutting that didn't sort of serve the arc of the story. But we decided together, to answer your question, to write an autobiography or memoir in this case. And I'm happy I did, because I couldn't write a suspense novel if I had to, or historical fiction or something. I don't think.
Brendan, during your process, would you think of stories to Tom's point where I'm going to go ahead and publish this is going to be on paper? Did you feel the need? Was there any time where you would go back to your loved ones and say, hey, I kind of want to write about this. Are you okay with it? And once the book was published or finished, if you did allow them to go over it, what was the reaction that you got to some of the stories that may not have shed the greatest light on them as human beings, as loved ones, as people?
Yeah, there were certain details that I asked. I would send excerpts to different people in the book, my mom, my sister, and they'd say, I prefer that not be in there. Or my mom was very supportive about the whole thing. She said, this is very, very brave of you, and I have to commend you for being brave and honest and transparent. And you're my son, and I love you no matter what. Whatever happens, happens. So she read the book, and she really liked it. She thought it was well written, and I kept sending her bits along the way. But the one thing she did say, she said, there's a little more information in there than needs to know about their child. And I can sympathize with her about that, because if my mom wrote a whole bunch of intimate details about her and my dad, I probably wouldn't want to read them either.
Which is usually the case. Nobody ever wants to know what goes on between their parents, right?
At least not
in that aspect.
Mm. Yes.
If they're fighting, though, I'm like, go have sex. Like, it needs to happen. Like, I'm done with this.
just let me know so I can leave the house.
Yeah, pretty much.
Exactly.
But so let's dive a little bit more into your story. So you grew up, I don't know if you want to talk about it specifically, but you grew up in a very religious household as a gay, and the story is told from the perspective of a gay boy, even though you weren't, you know, you didn't know you were gay or you weren't out yet. But it's told from that perspective. And I wanted you to speak a little bit to the religion aspect and how you navigated that with not only yourself, your family, but like how you move forward with that in life.
Well, it's a very complicated question. I have, I don't know how I feel about, I have mixed feelings about the church and religion as a whole. I don't see it as causing a lot of good. I believe in God. I still proudly call myself a Christian because at the end of writing all of this, I realized that the only person who was always there was God. And my relationship with God was what I could always stand on and always lean on when I needed to. So that was something that was important for me to communicate.
So the reason I'm asking you is because there are a lot of people that listen to our show that have religious families or have come from that background, and you have found a way through that. And if you could speak a little bit to finding your way through the difficulties of having a religious household that basically say, no, we don't respect and or support you. And then they eventually do. But like, how do you navigate that with your family? How do you navigate religion and all of that stuff as, you know, a young individual that's coming from a Catholic or religious family?
Well, I just kind of felt like I was a pinball and spinning around out of control. I had no one to speak to about it. I had two older brothers and a younger sister. And my father and my brothers we'd attend these big giant stadium sized men's retreats called Promise Keepers. And it was all about being faithful to your wife and having an obedient family, and wives need to submit to their husbands, as it says in the Bible.
It's my favorite part of the Bible.
Thanks.
It's like an episode of The Handmaid's Tale.
Yes, it does sound like A Handmaid's Tale. And I remember being a kid and looking around the church sometimes and thinking, you know what, I don't buy this. I was 11 or 12 and just thinking, you know, I don't, but that doesn't make sense to me because that's not what Jesus did and that's not what he taught. He taught us to love everybody. He loved everybody. He fed the sick and the poor and the homeless, and he bathed with the lepers. He took care of them. And I wanted to communicate in this book that faith and religion and God should be for everybody. God does not discriminate. God does not belong to a political party or to any faction of or sect of a religion. I think that's all made up by man. And I think that gay people should be allowed to celebrate their relationship with God if they want to also.
It's a beautiful thing. I agree. Mm-hmm. You know, it's I've had my issues with religion. I grew up Catholic, and you know, my grandmother was one of the most religious influences in my life, and she would force me to go to church with her. There was no saying no. She shoved me in the chorus, and I had to sing and do all that stuff. And that was it was enlightening in the sense that I could spend quality time with her because I absolutely love that woman, and I see how that was a calling for her. But it was never really something that I enjoyed visiting, you know, a church. It was all very intimidating, especially knowing who I was. I came out at a very young age. And so I can certainly relate and understand.
Yeah, it's strange. I think you really have to understand the psychology behind growing up in a heteronormative society, which all of us as gay, most of us as gay people did, and what that does to you and how it causes you to form a cocoon around yourself to protect yourself a little more than other people would. And I think that thinking stays with you forever. A lot of people would assume now that in many Western countries, gay people have rights and the same rights as everyone else, but we're talking about a handful, maybe 33
right
out of 200. So we're not even close to being there yet. And I think it's important to keep talking about these stories in hopes that people in other places will listen and hear them and find hope with their own journey.
100%. I mean, I couldn't have said it better myself. I do want to address one more thing that we haven't talked about. Not only did you have to come out as gay, but you also had to come out as HIV positive. And I was wondering how... I feel like there's so much stigma around AIDS and HIV that even coming out as gay is one thing, but then adding that on top of it adds a layer that a lot of people don't understand. And I was wondering if you were willing to share that with our listeners, how that process was for you.
It felt a lot like going back into the closet, to be honest. I felt all the same things that I felt when my family outed me, which is essentially how it happened. I never had the opportunity to tell them, hey, I'm gay. Let's work through this. Let's talk about this. I received a letter from my mom after a visit that said, I know about you and the guy you're dating, and this is not appropriate. And our family can't accept it. It was hard, of course. As a young person, all you want to do is please your family. And I felt like I had let them down monumentally. And when I was diagnosed HIV positive in 2005, all the same rush of feelings came back. I let myself down. I'd become a statistic. I'd become everything that my parents and all the people who don't know enough about HIV AIDS feared would happen to me has happened. And I've just become one of them. And it was a terrible feeling. And I used drugs and alcohol. And I really, a good friend of mine described that period of my life as a time when she felt like I was running from something. And I was running from myself. I was running from the reality that this could happen. And in 2005, at the time, I was still at the tail end where they said to wait to treat. Now they just put you on medication right away. But at the time, they said wait until your symptoms get worse and then treat you. So a lot of things were still up in the air. I could potentially still have died from complications. Obviously, medications have changed and given me a full life to look forward to.
Do you do any advocacy for HIV or anything like that?
I give speeches and things. I just gave a speech for the United States Conference on AIDS in Washington, D.C. in August. So I'm doing some more public speaking, and there are lots of different LGBTQ charities and HIV charities that we support, and we give proceeds from our concerts to. Mm-hmm. And then I sponsor kids because I have a very soft spot for kids. So I have a little girl who's 8 years old. She lives in Ecuador, and I'm putting her through school right now, which is really nice. It makes me feel good. So
that's amazing. Amazing. It's always good to give back, especially to the young children, right? Because it's the people that are going to shape our future. And as you can see through generations, I come from a generation that, you know, saw HIV and AIDS as a death sentence. And then, you know, you've got people that were growing up in the late 90s and the early 2000s that started seeing treatments that were actually working and allowing you to live a fulfilled life, even with the virus, that it was something that you could manage at that point. And then, you know, you jumpstart another decade and we've got PrEP. And so now there's an opportunity for people who don't have it to not get it and also be able to share and have meaningful relationships, even sexually, with other partners who may even be positive themselves. And so to see those three things, you know, jump from each one of those eras, it's amazing to think that what we're supporting now in young children, how that mindset and how that is going to change even into the decades that are yet to come. You know, will we find a cure? Will we come to a point in time and where we can say that we are in an HIV AIDS-free world?
What's really interesting about PrEP and PEP and is that we have an opportunity to eradicate the virus without having a cure, because we can prevent people from getting it. And I don't think there is another virus like that didn't require a vaccine. in the age of pandemics, we know all of this all too well. And I think this is an important story to talk about and to help people understand that we'll get through what's going on right now with COVID-19. Humanity always survives. We adapt. We keep going. We may lose some people along the way, but that's what happens. I just wanted to see if you can hear this.
It's 7 o'clock in New York. Please, yes.
In New York.
So that is a salute to all of the first responders and medical personnel that are doing amazing work in New York.
It's my favorite time of day. It breaks my heart. Yesterday was Easter, as we all know, and my husband and I played a virtual concert from our living room, which we have been doing Saturdays or Sundays every week, and then we went up to our roof terrace at 7 to cheer them on, but we brought all of our gear, and we brought a couple of other instrumentalists, and we played a little concert for everyone who was out on the balconies last night, so...
That's really, really amazing. Yeah.
So,
yeah.
So you were doing a virtual, but you were also playing on your balcony for people to hear.
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, for everyone who's kind of.
I want to be your neighbor. And by the way, the backdrop, your amazing scenery there. Are you in the city? Are you in New York?
Yeah, just like 63rd and West Bend Avenue. Just right behind me is Lincoln Center.
Oh.
Yeah. So we're close to the river. The river's just. Looking at that.
I would chop a foot off for that apartment.
I know exactly where you live now. Perfect. I'll see you when this is all over.
You're going to be outside my door. You just got
to
drive.
You happen to be in the neighborhood.
Like, who is this kid? I'm not a kid anymore, though. Anyway, so I have a couple more questions, but so you went through, so I don't want to give away too much in this about this book, but you went through a lot of stuff, and you're very open, and you talk about a lot of things that you went through, but then you also talk about the Landmark Forum, and I think that's kind of what brought you through a difficult time in your life, and I have no idea what that is, and I was wondering if you wanted to speak to that a little bit.
Sure. The Landmark Forum is I can't remember the original name. There was another name for it, but it's essentially a life coaching seminar that happens over 3 days. And there's about 150 people in the room and a very charismatic, forceful speaker who just kind of screams at you for 3 days in the most loving way possible. And you do kind of meditation exercises. And I'm sure you guys have heard of this format before. You pinpoint relationships that are not perfect in your life, and you make phone calls during that weekend and you talk to them, maybe people you've stopped talking to or relationships that are broken. And what it really helped me understand was that life doesn't mean as much as we put into it. We're all so concerned about what's going to happen in the future, but really all we have is right now. So we should live our lives accordingly. We should treat others with kindness and respect at all times, because we never know when our last moment with that person might be.
Mm-hmm.
And it also made me understand that I was at fault as well with a lot of ways that I was treating my family. I looked down on them because of the way that they thought about me and how rigid their thinking was. And I didn't take the time to understand that they come from a place of very deep rooted faith, and they believe wholeheartedly all the things that they believe to be true, and they're good people. So I wouldn't take that away from them. So it really helped me see things from their perspective as well as my own. And I would recommend it for anybody. I think it's a really, really good, wonderful thing. It was kind of a life changer for me. It taught me how to love myself again.
Right.
I hadn't been doing that for years.
Oh, honey, believe me, I know.
And that is not one of the easiest things to do, right? To come to terms with the fact that you know that there are things about people that you're not going to be able to change, but that you have to somehow find a happy medium to be able to exist. And that's more importantly so when it's family, when it's someone like your mother or your father or a sibling or an aunt or an uncle. It's just, you know, navigating that could be one of the toughest things that we do as humans.
It's true. don't know what I was going to say next.
So, well, so before we let you go, Elsie, did you have something you wanted to say? I'm sorry if I cut you off.
You guys have covered most of it.
She has a beautiful smile, by the
way. She's stunning.
This whole thing?
I know. She's way prettier than all of us. But
I love your story. You actually did say something that's really important, and it's something that I advocate for a lot. And it takes a lot from a human being to actually admit to themselves which portions of a poor relationship is their responsibility, and where they could have been better. And unfortunately, that sometimes, or a lot of times, means that you have to continuously take the high road, it's demoralizing, and you feel like you're a victim because why do I have to always be the better person? But when you do that, you pave the way for arguments, for fights, for relationships to be better when you are ready to admit your responsibility. And by offering that right to the other party, what you're doing essentially is disarming them by letting them know that what you're looking to do is to heal, is to have better communication and for the relationship to be better, as opposed to accuse them and make them feel badly about their poor behavior. So that's a really, really incredible thing to be able to accomplish in life. It's to be able to say to ourselves, well, you know why, looking back at it, maybe I could have been better at this.
Yeah. Yeah, I wasn't perfect. I'm still not. We all make mistakes. We're human. That's part of our nature. And sometimes I don't treat people fairly, but I try to be as nice as I can and to make sure and make up for those mistakes if I make them. And I'm very quick to apologize. And I think, yeah, we just all need to continue to treat people with kindness and respect. And one of the things that I love about what's happening in the world right now, despite the tragedy of the virus and all the deaths and the fear and the people out of work, et cetera, is all the beautiful things that are happening. The way that people are going in and checking on each other and practicing random acts of kindness. And I think humans are all understanding, maybe for the first time in a generation, or in 100 years rather, that we're all the same. And I hope that's what we come out with this, and is that none of us are any different from anyone else, and the virus does not discriminate. It can come after anybody, and we're all in the boat.
And we're in it together.
Yes. And I hope that we as humankind moving forward from this will treat each other with that understanding.
We were just talking about that during the first half of the show. We were talking about, you know, some of the things that we're seeing happen as a result of being faced with something that we haven't seen in the generation. We're talking about the San Francisco Gay Men's Chorus. 150 members got together and did this amazing, beautiful virtual collage of great songs, and it was amazing, and it was dedicated to all the, you know, first responders and stuff. And we were also talking about some of the things that we've learned as a result of this, things that we can do without and such. So yeah, there's a lot to be learned from this, but also the experience in itself is something that I think is going to allow us to grow as a human race, at least for this generation.
Mm-hmm. 100%.
Yeah.
So before we let you go, I have two last things for you. And first is, I don't know if there's a favorite story or something that you want to share as a teaser for our listeners. And then
have the book.
Well, he wrote it. No, he doesn't have to read it. Just like, okay. You know, given a bridge version of a story. And then finally, your hopes and dreams for this book, what you hope to accomplish with it.
Well, I was a very accident-prone kid. I bit my tongue off, and I had to have... I pulled the stitches out 3 times. I didn't go to speech therapy. I ran myself through a sliding glass door that my mom had just cleaned. So it looked like there was no door, and I scars on my upper lip. I've fallen off cliffs in San Francisco. I've been hit by a car. I've blown out eardrums. Accidents have followed me throughout my life. So in the early days, my parents were just trying to keep me young and keep me alive. And that whole section of the book is kind of comical, and we all still joke about that. I've had a little bit of a respite from severe accidents, I don't know, in the last 10 years.
Thank God.
Thank God, because at our age, you know, our bones do not heal as well.
When I was reading that section, I was like, oh my God, like, holy crap, he's been through a lot. Like, I think I hurt myself one time where I had to get stitches as a kid, and I can't remember anything else. But if this was me, my parents would have probably just been like, all right,
we're building a bubble around this kid.
I don't know what to do with you.
No, I mean, when you said...
We'll stitch her up.
Put some hydrogen peroxide on it. It makes it better.
She'll be fine.
Yeah. When you said you bit your tongue off, I was just like, oh my God, I almost swallowed mine, because I visualized the event, but I can't put a correlation to the pain sensation to it. So it's shocking.
Your tongue.
It didn't hurt. My mom picked it up, rushed me to the hospital, and they used leeches to stitch it back on.
Yeah, he bit off his tongue, Elsie. That's why I was like, I can visualize it, but I can't feel it.
I was a really carefree kid, and I was in my backyard one day. It was in the summertime, and we had this and I used to run with my tongue out of my mouth. That was kind of the trademark thing. And I slipped on the wet pavement and bit it off.
Wow.
True story. I'm sure that's going to get a lot of people to pre-order the book as soon as this is over. I'm kidding.
Bite your tongue and get the book.
No.
Yeah.
Well, I think
I would like to read more.
I think what's great about how candid you were about your childhood and that just like that experience of hurting yourself all the time is you get a feel for what you're going to get throughout the book, right? He literally is giving you his life story and like the things that he went through and all of the things that made him who he is today, whether it was biting his tongue off or meeting the man of his dreams surprisingly on a dating app. But it's very vivid and honest and open, and I think that's what's really beautiful about the book. But that being said, hopes and dreams for the book?
Hopes and dreams for the book. I hope that younger people might read it and understand the progression of HIV AIDS and what it was like before I was infected, and what it was like when I was infected, and what it's like now. And I think a lot of young people may assume that, oh, that's, it's easy, it's no big deal now. If I get it, I just take a pill and my life goes on. Which is true to a certain extent, but it's still something that nobody really wants. I have to go to the doctor and get a lot of blood work and monitor other levels. And there are lots of other health conditions, byproducts, health conditions that come along with having an autoimmune disease. And it's not fun. I don't think about it all the time. It doesn't depress me anymore. It doesn't weigh me down. But it's not something that you want to get. And I hope that the younger generations understand how much the older generations fought for them and were real life martyrs for them, so they could have the freedoms to live a life without fear of HIV/AIDS. I think that's really important, and I hope that people get that from reading the book.
Agreed. That's really amazing.
It really is, and you just put that into perspective so well, because I've had this conversation and always argue this point that they truly don't have an understanding of what it was. Again, back in the 80s, when you got it, most people didn't survive beyond a year, right? And or two. And so I think that they look at it from a different angle, from a different view, and if they understood the impact and what changes, I think that they would probably see things a little bit different. So, Well, Brandon, I want to thank you for joining us today. It has been an amazing conversation to be able to have you on the show and talk about your book. We're super excited. It's no longer coming out in May, but we can all wait till September 12th. And we'll make sure to put all the information along with the links for the book on Amazon. Yep. So you guys can pre-order.
Pre-order anytime.
Yeah, and thank you. And hopefully when the book is launched in September, you want to come back and join us and be a guest again and tell us a little bit about, you know, where you're at then and how the book is doing. We would love to have you on. We always say to our guests, once you're on, you're stuck with us.
Your family.
Yeah, that's my friends.
Yeah, you guys are fun. And you have to meet my crazy Australian husband. You'll like him too.
Fantastic. Maybe not when Chris is on the show, though, because he might try to steal him away from you.
Yeah.
Good luck.
So where can everybody find the book, find you, social media, plug yourself?
They can find it on Amazon.com, which I'm pretty sure most people know about. You can find me on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at Brandon J Music. Just keep in mind, I spell my name weird, B-R-A-N-D-E-N-J Music. Or if you just Google Brandon and James, you can find us everywhere. We make a lot of noise. We play a lot of concerts, and we will continue to play them when all this is over.
I want you to know there's a rainbow behind you right now.
Oh,
that is beautiful.
And it is the most... I wanted to catch that on film. Oh, there it is.
Oh, wow. How did you orchestrate that? That's very impressive.
I made a phone call.
Who did you say? Yeah.
Mother Nature.
Can you stop this fucking virus?
So you got your rainbow wings today.
Yes, I love
it. That's awesome.
So again, I want to thank you for joining us. And again, like I said, you know, please keep us apprised, and we'll let our listeners know about the book. Obviously, it's releasing in September, and we'll post everything on tonight's post. And again, we're super appreciative that you took time out of your day in quarantine to talk with us. Thank you.
Thank you so much. You guys stay safe and healthy. And it was a pleasure. And I look forward to being here again with you in September.
Yeah, sounds great.
See you then. Thank you, Brandon.
Bye.
Bye.
Well, ladies and gents, that was Brandon James. I heart him. And the reason being is because he made a really, really, really good point when it comes to HIV. You can't stress it enough for the younger generation to not take this lightly, because it is a lifestyle change. Once, you know, there's a lot more involved than just a pill. And I think that was something that was truly important for someone who's been through that. To say and to speak up and speak of.
Yeah, no, I think that his story has the potential to actually make a huge difference for a lot of people. And I know that we've heard, similar stories throughout the, how many years has it been now? 3 years?
Girl, but where you been?
I know, right?
This is episode 211. We're going on 5 years.
Mm-hmm. But just like how visceral and honest he is in this book is, it's going to be pretty awesome. So check it out.
I'm excited.
Now all I want to do is smile at the camera.
That's, well, anytime somebody tells you, oh, she's got this pretty or gorgeous, she's like, her tits perk up, she's ready to go. So Trish, you had a story, and I know that, you know, we're probably running a little long, but I want you to talk about it because
it's super quick. Yeah,
it's super quick and super fun. So tell us about it.
Yeah. All right. So we are all on, I don't know if everybody is, but I'm on Zoom meetings all the time now. And you have an option to have, you know, like right now you can see behind me, I have this wonderful photo of Paris that we can't visit right now because of COVID-19. But what's amazing about Zoom is you can change the background and you can put whatever you want up. And now HRC has developed pride backgrounds. Hello. So if you want to be super gay and super pro gay and positive,
and you also should always want to be.
Yeah, you can download these rainbow backdrops or the HRC backdrops. They're pretty amazing. Exactly. They're right there. He just showed you. But they seem really fun. I mean, so what I do every morning when I meet up with my team, every morning we have a meeting at 10 or 11 a.m. And every morning I either have an eye mask on or a face mask on or something just to make everybody kind of smile. And they never know what they're going to get. Is it going to be a charcoal mask? Is it going to be a 24 karat gold mask? Is it going to be, you know, green tea eye patches? They don't know what they're going to get, but every morning it makes them smile. And so like having something fun and having something supportive and prideful in the background is kind of a great way to, you know, still be vocal and supportive, even no matter what organization you're working for.
And I'll tell you, that's great and fantastic, but there was no better backdrop than that rainbow that just literally showed up behind Brandon James.
That was pretty amazing. Yeah.
That's all after, I'm shit, about after, that.
After the weather today, like, what?
Mm-hmm. That was awesome and beautiful all in one. I was just like, holy shit, there's an actual rainbow behind this guy.
That's awesome. He won at backdrops today.
Seriously, like he won the award. So Nick, what you're saying is that these backdrops are available through Zoom and for Zoom.
Yep. I literally just closed it out. But yeah, you can download it. I think it's on HRC. We'll put the link on our post tonight, but you can download the actual backdrop from the website, and then you just upload it to Zoom, just like you were uploading an attachment or something like that to a document or an email. So it's pretty simple, pretty easy, and it's fun, and it's gay, super gay. So we love that.
Yeah, just like how we change our little things and stuff that are happening behind the scenes here. I mean, this programming that we're using right now to do this, you know, virtual show is pretty powerful. I mean, you can do a lot of stuff and show a lot of different things. And I've been working with it. And, you know, we had audio issues last week. This week, it'll be something else. Next week, I mean, I'm still, you know, what do you call me? The intern? Yeah.
Yeah, well, pretty much. Actually, it's funny because Elsie and I have been kind of bitching about the fact that we can't mirror our camera. And so finally today I was like, screw it. And I was doing some research, but I couldn't find anything. So I messaged them and I was like, so we've been using StreamYard for the podcast for a couple of weeks. And I'm wondering if there's an app or a way that we can mirror the camera. And the response was, no, we don't have that function as of yet. And my response to them was, ugh. Other than that, it's been great so far. And they were like, thank you. Please bear with us while we're developing the app.
So, I mean, and I don't think that, you know, once we're through COVID and we're able to actually get into the studio all together, that we'll probably use a tool like this. I mean, this is more of like a virtual way of being able to get everybody in the same space. But it's been truly amazing. And it was one of the best $25 I've ever spent. Seriously.
We believe you, and the company should give you some kind of sponsorship, given the fact that you plug them all the time. Like, he's like so into this.
So get on that.
I'm on it.
So that being said, I think that it's time to probably just wind our way down. Elsie, did you get your notes to update and everything? Are you good, honey?
Yes.
I'm just saying, because we're going to jump into some stuff and some of it is going to be you.
Don't be jumping into some stuff.
Okay, I'll try not to jump. We're just going to go into...
I'm going to wait for the gay term. Go. Okay.
So, so Nick, why don't we throw it over to you?
All right, everybody. So here we are again. It's Mama Kim's Minute. And am I getting a timer or am I just doing it?
I'll just do it.
All right. So number one, condom factory workers are considered essential now that there is a global shortage. Two, Jake Gyllenhaal says Heath Ledger turned down Oscars over Brokeback Mountain joke. Three, Anthony Fauci calls out extraordinary stigma gays face while standing in front of Mike Pence. Four, memes of Chicago's stern lesbian mayor are taking over the internet and she loves it. Five, leftover fabric from the AIDS quilts are being used to make face masks for healthcare workers.
When I read that, I was just like,
I know.
My heart. So we all know the history of the AIDS quilt and how powerful a message that sent in the 90s when it was unveiled at the National Mall in Washington, D.C. And so to think that there was any leftover fabric, because that thing is massive. It's a beautiful thing, and it's being used for a fantastic cause, and that's awesome.
Yeah.
And that's awesome. And, yeah. So why don't we jump into our Gay Talk term? So we're going to toss it over to Elsie, but because, you know, we don't want her to like, get all confused and stuff, this Gay Talk term is brought to you by...
I froze.
GayRealEstate.com.
I'm proud of you. Yes, queen. Okay. So, Nick, we can still hear you fine. You haven't frozen on our end. So why don't you tell us what our Gay Talk term is today?
Bumping pussies.
Uh-huh.
I hate that word, by the way.
Okay, but that's our Gay Talk term. It comes out of the book. Listen, I don't make these things up.
It's literature. It's literature. This is not your fault. Absolutely.
So.
The embarrassing of two homosexual men who find themselves too passive, active, or in other ways too similar to create a sexual situation. As in, he thought that you and I were carrying on together. What would we do, bump pussies?
Oh my God, Elsie! Yes, queen! Okay, so this Honda's Day in gay history is special, and I'm going to let Nick take over because, you know, he's just going to go bananas.
On this day in gay history, of course, brought to you by
GayRealEstate.com.
All right. So when April 13th, April 13th, 1997, Ellen DeGeneres came out in Time magazine. Ellen DeGeneres appears on Time magazine covered Time magazine's cover with the words, "Yep, I'm gay."
And that was powerful in itself. Again, you know, her coming out.
I was 10. Yeah. I was 10 years old when that happened.
She changed the game for a lot of people and how to come out. And not only that, she also changed TV and made history with the puppy episode. And she also got fired for it. Lost her job, almost lost her career.
Right. Yeah.
So, yeah, we love Ellen DeGeneres.
I could go on for hours.
Mm. All right. Well, listen, ladies and gents, if you love the show, make sure that you go rate, subscribe, and review on your favorite podcasting service. By subscribing, you get the latest and greatest of our show delivered right to your favorite device or web browser as soon as our episodes are published. You can also support us on Patreon, which gets you access to this amazing software that we're using and the video version of the show just for you guys. And then you can make any donation in any denomination of a dollar or more. Those are collected monthly, and we certainly appreciate it. Elsie?
Next week.
Here we go.
We welcome Ash and Chess, authors of The Gay Agenda, a joyful celebration of the LGBTQ plus community in development, history, and culture. Packed with facts, trivia, timelines, and charts, and featuring 100 full-color illustrations.
The book is incredible. Just letting you know. We have a copy of it here in studio, and so we'll show you guys next week. Nick?
Mm-hmm. Thank you, thank you, thank you to our guest, Brendan James. Lyrics of My Life will be available September now.
September 13th.
Is that the date? I'm not sure. So in September, we will post all the links tonight.
September 12th. Sorry, I put it in the notes. Okay.
All right. So everybody, don't forget, get your discount for Future Method today. Each time you clean out with water or enemas, delicate tissues are harmed and cells are damaged, increasing chances of injury and or STDs. The first of its kind, doctor-developed formula that gently cleanses before you play without hurting your bum. And now you can use code GAYTALK20 for 20% off, valid for one purchase or a subscription per person.
Yas queen. Elsie,
you're let's up. Put a rubber on it.
Yes! Finally! She came with her A game today. She came with her did. B game.
I just feel like I wasn't very contributing today, and the least I can do is get my fucking cue straight.
All right. Well, go.
I don't know. is available on our website, gaytalk20.com, under shows and episodes. It is also available as a free download on iTunes, Google Play Music, and Stitcher.com.
Stitcher Radio.
almost. All right. Nick announces you can find us on social media, Facebook, Gay Talk 2.0, Instagram, Gay Talk 2.0, Twitter at Gay Talk 20. You can email us at gaytalk2.0 at gmail.com. Tom, don't fuck it up.
And if you need to reach out to us, you can just head on over to our website, click on the Contact Us tab located at the top of your web browser. There you can leave comments, you can suggest topics, or submit a question for the cast. You can also call us and leave us your question via voice message. We can answer those for you on the show. The phone number is 334-GAY-TALK, and if you need those digits, it is 334-429-8255. Don't forget that we do stream live every Monday at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and you can access that live stream by visiting digitalstreamradio.com. With that, all that's left to say is that is our show. We thank you very much, ladies and gents. Y'all have a good night. Bye!
Bye!
Thank you for listening to this episode of Gay Talk 2.0. Tune in next time for more dish.